Hey, it's Eric G. Around the House is sponsored by Baldwin Hardware. For 75 years, Baldwin Hardware has been known for its first-class quality and craftsmanship in door and cabinetry hardware. As an alumnus of the Baldwin Hardware Design Council, I can say I have seen the details and quality from design to the finished product. If you're looking for a new style and old-world craftsmanship, I can tell you there is only one Baldwin Hardware. Check out what would look great in your home at baldwinhardware.com. Thanks for tuning in to Around the House with Eric G. This is hour number two of the radio show on April 18th. Thanks for joining us. Now, we'll be talking to Bloom Pest Control for a couple segments here about all those summertime pests that are going to be creeping in. The sugar ants, the wasps, the hornets, all those things that kind of, well, bug you that time of year. And we want to see if we can prevent those before they get out there and get crazy. And then we'll get back to fence building that we talked about in hour number one. Enough of me talking. Let's get back to the show.
Get you on the radio, yeah, you gotta be on the radio. If the kids can only hear you, they go out of control. You gotta be on the radio. You want the money and the fame and the sold-out shows, and you gotta get.
You gotta get on the radio. Welcome to Around the House with Eric G. This is where we talk home improvement every single weekend. Thanks for joining us. I've got on the phone here one of my buddies, Nathan from Bloom Pest Control. Welcome back to Around the House, brother.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I'm in my remote office or my, definitionally, in my van.
Yeah.
With you.
There we go, man. It's awesome when I can say, hey, man, can you pull over and talk for a few minutes? And that's exactly how we're doing this. So we had a lot of questions that came up on Facebook this week because I posed the question earlier this week that was like, all right, we're coming into spring. We got so many crazy things happening right now with springtime coming out, people being home more. And I said, what questions do you have out there? And we got a handful of them that came in, and they're all pretty good ones. So you ready to take a few questions?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's see how we do here.
All right. Eric? Yep, exactly. Teamwork makes for dream work. All right. All right. So my friend Rachel here, moles are taking over my yard. What can be done about them? We don't have a sprinkler system, luckily, but can they cause foundation damage? I love Rachel. She's great. But that's always one of those questions. People see those little buggers. You know, if you ever watch Caddyshack, you know, the gophers and mole problems you get out there. Gophers make a little bit bigger hole than the moles do, but they all ruin a really nice yard. What's your take on it?
Well, one of the ways you can keep moles from getting in your yard is just don't take care of it.
So true.
Make sure. Yeah. Unfortunately, the blessing that comes in having a beautiful yard is you do attract moles. I almost said mold. Can you believe it?
Yeah, I know it. It's what we do every day.
Yeah. But seriously, I've been out in the industry for quite some time. I've seen very few moles make it into the crawl space. We do a lot of crawl space inspections. A small, usually it's on a more shallower foundation. I have not ever seen a mole population compromise a foundation. It's typically would be the compression of the earth below the foundation that could cause a structural issue. So my opinion, it is a really good question because I've always wondered too, but by virtue of being out there, probably 10,000 homes being in crawl spaces, I've never seen any incidents where moles have been able to go so far as to undermine a foundation and cause the house to have some structural issues.
You know, I've seen more structural issues be caused by actually, if you have clay soil, I've seen more structural conditions, you know, with cracks in the foundation caused by people not watering their yards in clay soil in the summertime here in the Portland area, for instance. Because what happens is I've seen it where, and I've had structural engineers go, man, if you just watered your lawn, you'd be better off. Here's what happens is you get that clay soil that expands out like a sponge. And then when we get into the summer months where we don't get a lot of rain, it dries up like the dried up sponge does and shrinks up and you get those cracks in the soil. Well, what happens is if you've got a little crack in the foundation, maybe around a vent cover or one of those things, now you're flexing that foundation by the expansion and contraction. Whereas if you had a sprinkler system and kept that somewhat hydrated, the soil below the house wouldn't move in the same rate as if you were running a sprinkler.
Yeah, I have a real life example of that. We went out to take a look at a house, and literally it looked like the house was folding in on itself at the back of the home.
Wow.
And they were asking if we had did anything about that, could do anything about that as a company. I was like, no, not quite that, because we don't do structural foundation repair work. We're actually called out there. We did have a good recommendation for the folks. She did was able to save her house. And that was exactly what had happened there, because it was a dry part of the season. It just decided to go at that point. The house had been there for like 30 years. And it was just last year that because it was extraordinarily dry at that location at that time, it actually did exactly what you described. And I guess the benefit of watering your yard and having moles, you can avoid foundation issues.
Exactly. Yeah. So
is that the end of the tale of the story?
It kind of the tale. Here's the funny part of that is that you're right. And I would just talk your neighbor into creating a better, well cared for lawn than yours. And the moles will work their way out of there. Otherwise, you're calling one of those companies out there that are like the mole trappers, the mole gassers, the mole, you know, that because you guys don't deal with moles really, do you? You guys aren't the mole experts tracking them down.
Not really. And we made a purposeful choice on that because generally people are dissatisfied with the results because there's always another mole waiting to move in.
Oh yeah.
And to get out there costs our clients money. And the end result, the reason why we just try to figure out ways not to have them in the yard, which the only way I came up with, sarcastically speaking, is to, you know,
not take care of it.
I know that it probably doesn't fit well because we all want our yards to look beautiful, but otherwise you'll probably just have to deal with them, you know,
exactly.
In regards to that.
Just keep throwing that fertilizer, that organic fertilizer over your neighbor's fence, you know, pre-seed some grubs over there for them to make sure they've got them and get them over to your favorite neighbor.
Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, I think a mole has a territory of about, I thought it was like close to half an acre.
Wow. Okay.
And there's
one mole. Yeah.
So, yeah. And sometimes you think you have 20, but you really just have one. And then once you get that one, which is the alpha mole, technically in the world of moles, then you, once you get rid of that one, then the other ones are like, right on, it's time for us to move in. So,
That's crazy. Yeah. All right. Our next question from Carrie came in. What is the best way to remove anthills in your flower beds that is dog safe? And then the follow-up question is going to be about hornet and wasp treatments, but, let's tackle the anthill.
The anthill. Yes. Well, in pest control, we have, you know, there's three different main methods of controlling insects or let's call it pests like rodents and so forth, mechanical, biological, and chemical. Mechanically, although it sounds kind of scary, you can potentially uproot that nest. Typically in the Northwest, we're dealing with soil ants and or odorous house ants, which is a category of soil ants that'd be living in the ground. You can uproot them. You can just make the environment less attractive for them. So I don't know how deep you want to get into it as digging up an anthill, because some of the ants do bite, even though it's not very painful from my experience, but that is just a judgment that I have towards them. You never know.
Yeah, that sounds a little dangerous to me, especially if we've got somebody listening to the podcast down in the South someplace where they've got fire ants and they make a really, you know, some of those deadly ants that actually can come in and attack you. So I don't want to go too far into that. That might be best left for the professionals like you guys, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I understand. I didn't think about that, Eric. That's a real good point.
I'm like, they were red and they were everywhere, and it was a 5-foot high pile in the backyard. I decided to dig it up. Bad idea.
Now the truth behind it, all these insects are good for our environment. What I think we're trying to avoid is getting them in our houses. You know, we don't want people or insects living in our houses rent free unless they're relatives, you know?
Yeah.
We're just looking at it that way. If they'll do their thing in the garden, they clean up the garden. They take care of, they're omnivores. So they take care of dead leaves or vegetation and other insects. So they're not terribly bad. They're just sometimes unsightly and disturbing when you see 100,000 of them bursting out of a pile in the ground. But they typically will go away. Just trying to keep them away from the house is the main goal.
No kidding, because they're always coming in that kitchen. They're getting into the any place where there's food, and especially if you've got just a around the dishwasher. If you've got a kind of a unsightly dishwasher, they'll tend to go get in there. I've seen them everywhere in the kitchen, but you know, pet food, all those things. All right, when we come back, we're going to dive more into sugar ants and how to deal with those things around your house. One more segment with Bloom Pest Control right after these important messages, and then we'll dive into some other subjects. We'll do that just as soon as Around the House returns.
And Satchel from Steel Panther, and you are listening to
Around the House with Eric G.
Yeah.
We love Eric G, and you should too.
Welcome back to Around the House with Eric G. This is where we talk home improvement every single weekend. Thanks for joining us. Hey, if you are new to the show, check us out on Facebook, Around the House with Eric G, and make sure you head up to the website, aroundthehouseonline.com, and that's where you get all the rest of the information about the show, and we are on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. You can find all of us around everywhere on social media. Well, I've been talking this last week with my friends at Bloom Pest Control, and we were talking about some of those hot subjects that we had a lot of requests on Facebook about, and I want to jump back into that because I was just had a nice open conversation with them, and if you want to hear this in its entirety as one piece, you can head over to the podcast and catch it there. You'll see it up as a midweek special. Here's my interview with Bloom Pest Control, and let's jump back into, well, we were talking sugar ants when we went to break. Let's get back to that part of it.
Maybe planting those flowers a little bit further away from the edge of the home and let them do the thing. You know, if you're not trying to utilize a chemical control method, and you may be able to make it through another season. Yeah, but I get it.
Gotcha.
I don't like them bursting out by my house or in the flower beds where I live.
And if you're trying to get them out of the flower bed, maybe either digging them up or just using some of the ant bait type material that your pets aren't going to get into might be the only other way to do it.
Yeah, the actual granular baits are fairly safe. I know that my dog, who I call him the world's smartest, dumbest dog, will. The minute I put something down on the ground, he thinks it's food. So I've had him consume it, but the only thing he does is, you know, get it between his teeth, you know. So there are some safe methods where safer, you know, can't say safe nowadays, you know,
perfectly safe.
Yeah, but you can go ahead and utilize something like that to start to apply a control on them or direct them in another place, like your neighbor's house.
Nice.
I think it's a theme right now. Get on out of here.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know the difference between in-laws and outlaws, right?
Yep.
Outlaws are wanted.
You gotta stop.
I know.
It's good.
So your
teenage daughter would call that a dad joke, by the way.
It is. It's a full-on dad joke. So, I mean,
that's good. That's
Julie's
good
daughter got me a shirt a couple years ago that says "Dad jokes are rad jokes," and so I like dropping those in every once in a while. So here's the second part of her question: is what are the best hornet and wasp treatments? Jason was attacked by paper wasps last year, and she's already been hit twice by hornets this week alone.
So. Yeah, I would actually say that almost fit a category of a DIY, unless you're a DIYer that likes to possibly get stung. I don't have a really good method of like getting rid of nests. I do know that the the wasp traps and hornet traps that you can pick out at your local hardware store. A lot of them work really well when they're in the height of the season to keep those hornets or wasps from your hot dogs and hamburgers, you know, in the peak of the season when it's nice and warm. But otherwise, it's almost like you have to go in and exterminate those.
Yeah, you've got to literally go hunting. I mean, yeah, you're right. The best thing you could do would be right now would be to put the hornet traps and wasp traps up and just see what you get. But,
yeah,
you know, it right now is not primetime trapping season, as you know.
Yeah, you have to almost get it warmer. It's typically they start to work a lot better in the warmer parts of the summer here in the Northwest. I don't know how far your podcast goes out, but that's usually July, August is when it starts getting a little kooky and crazy.
It goes all over the country, but I'll tell you what, I've noticed that, you know, again, it's depending on who you're, you know, I guess different parts of the country, as you know, have different types. And so what I've run into is that, you know, that like the rescue trap works good over here, but then the tarot trap works well over here. And, you know, it's very regional, because I've seen some really big debates on what works and what doesn't. And I'll try something that works perfectly here in the Portland metro area, and then my friend or a family member buys it in Eastern Washington, and they're like, man, that didn't work at all. You know? So it's just depending on the species that you're dealing with. But, yeah, that's maybe where you go into your local home improvement store that's your, you know, your local non-big box store and start talking to their garden expert and see what they've got on the shelf that is the most popular and track it down that way.
Absolutely. I mean, there for every wasp, it seems like there's 10 types of designs for our hornets. There's 10 different designs for a trap that will capture them. And I know that one year, one particular trap we were recommending was working really well. And then the next year didn't work so well. And so it looked like as if we're not just trying to recommend just something, but it does change.
It does.
Over
it. It does.
It's really weird.
It's interesting. You know, what I think works, you know, so I'm going to go back to my old traps here because we moved, of course, as you know. And, you know, I've got so much forest around here. I was out putting up fence yesterday and I was fighting that. And I was noticing that I had, you know, a couple things. One, I had some honeybees floating around. So I'm like, awesome. Love honeybees. Those are cool.
Yeah.
I'm good. It's just when we get those wasp hornets and yellow jackets out there. And so, you know, I'm going to try my traps that I used at my old house last year and see what comes up here. But I had you probably know they're the little tiny, are those paper wasps or what are those little tiny ones that are the very tiny, almost a little bit bigger than a fly, but they're some kind of wasp or hornet.
I think I know. Are they black in color? Is that what you're describing?
Yeah, they're kind of that.
They're like a wasp, but they're, I don't know the exact name of them.
Yeah.
But they're a wasp as opposed to a hornet, and we can, you know, that's some nerd stuff to get into.
Yeah, no, that's bad radio. I don't want to get into the nerd stuff. So
yeah, debatable, but yeah, they're all kind of like hunters.
Yeah.
You know, the wasps are all hunter type, insects. They being one of them, I've run into them before. I've never ever had an interaction with them that has left me with a sting, but
they're aggressive. I've had some bad experiences with those.
Yeah.
Well, I see them more.
I just got lucky.
Yeah. I see them more in forested areas. Like they will be in the top. My experience with them is that I've seen them in the top of like a broken off tree that's dying back, and they'll build a big nest up at the top of that tree up there, and they'll just hide out. I guess that teaches me for trying to cut my tree down with the wasps up in it. And then I had them chasing like a cartoon across my whole backyard. For more of Bloom Pest Control, head over to our podcast and look for the midweek special. We'll be back just as soon as Around the House returns.
Hey, this is Ron Keel, the metal cowboy from Keel, the Ron Keel Band and Steeler. We are rocking Around the House with Eric G.
Raise your fist, make it.
Welcome back to Around the House with Eric G. This is where we talk home improvement every single weekend. Thanks for joining us. I'm Eric G.
I'm Dane Vauder. Hey, give us a call here in the studio. Our number is 971-233-8992. Please give us a call. We'd love to hear your questions.
Yeah, leave us a message. We will call you back, put you on the show. And if you don't want to be on the show, go ahead and give us a call. Or just send us a message over on Facebook as well if you're shy. It's okay. We just want to help you with your home improvement project, and we'll walk you through and make sure that you get all those answers you're looking for.
I mean, we've had people that have called specifically saying they don't want to be on air, but we are more than happy to walk them through their issues and give them any sort of feedback that we can to maybe give you that extra helping hand in your project.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we just had some great conversation with our friends at Bloom Pest Control last hour here, the last couple segments actually, and this is one of those things I think it's great, you know, because with all the questions we had from moles to wasps to
a lot of insects,
a lot of insect stuff, just all those different things. And really kind of what can you do with those around your garden and around the house that isn't, you know, nuking everything and coming up some good programs. And so make sure you hear the rest of that interview. That'll be on Wednesday on the podcast. Make sure you grab it there. You can get all that with Bloom Pest Control, because we hit so many different subjects, from sugar ants to making sure we're not killing bees out there as well.
Well, this is the time to hit it. Almost everybody across the nation is going through some sort of change in their weather.
Yeah.
It's getting warmer pretty much everywhere right now, as in April, as it typically does. So
except my buddy and John in Montana, he was showing me that he was out. He was shoveling snow on the around the house nation.
But he's probably had snow all winter.
It's Montana. I mean, he's that way till June. I get it. So it, but
with mosquitoes and bees and wasps, this is when everything typically wakes up for the year.
Oh yeah, and being here that I have not spent a summer here, I've got my two traps getting ready to hang up here after we're done recording today, so I can make sure and get those up, because I've already noticed some of them flying around here, and I'm like, all right, already there's a few too many hornets and wasps flying around. Let's get these under control now, because I don't want to have it.
Barbecuing on a weekend?
Man, I was out, but the summer before, I was at a restaurant. I'm not going to bag on these guys because I love their burgers here in Portland. And they're way out in the middle of nowhere, but they had a August wasp problem that was brutal. And I mean, I don't like them, but when I go to eat into my burger, and yes, that's exactly where it is.
Didn't want to say it on air,
because I love these guys. I mean, but it wasn't there. Oh man, let's put it this way. When their burgers, somebody in a truck hit the train bridge and took the train bridge out and blocked it there.
Yep.
The Washington County Sheriff's Department made a how-to video with their cars to how to get to this tavern that has good burgers. And when they make a how-to video of how to get around it with the dash cam on their car, to get there, you know you got a good place to go eat.
Well, first of all, you know people were probably calling them, asking them how they could get there. That was probably an issue that needed to be filled.
Sure.
And then, yeah, I'm sure, I bet you some of those Washington County people probably like those burgers too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that I'd drive up there and get takeout right now that I'm kind of sitting here hungry.
It's like 20 miles out of my way to go home, and I'll still drive out
Absolutely. It's just that good. But anyway, it's just one of those things. But they had so many out there that you'd, like, your food would get delivered and you had 20 around your head. That's outside of my comfort level. I don't like two. I don't like 20.
No.
You know, and they couldn't do much about it because they were in a position where they were, you know, fighting those as well. So they were giving it a good college try, but it was one of those things that just clearly had gotten out of control.
It's kind of where you're like, yeah, I'm going to go eat in the car.
Yeah, we went inside. You know, I was like, all right, yeah, we'll go inside. We'll do that. Same. So
before we get off this topic, good luck sitting inside at this place, because it's usually packed.
Yeah, no kidding. It's good food, though. It's good food. So anyway, one of the things that I wanted to finish up when talking about fences and stuff was, you know, after you've got this fence built and you've got it up there, gates are an important one. And I want to talk about that, because I want to talk about gates and then some staining. When we were talking in the last hour about fencing, really take the time and get a good metal gate kit. And I like that, because I can build a killer cedar fence with a cedar gate with no metal in it except for a hinge, and I guarantee you just about every time it's going to sag. Because what happens here, at least in our area, even more so, is you get the wet wood, you get the dry wood. It just works its way loose. And so I like using the metal kits that actually give it support, so it looks like from the outside a very nice cedar gate. But that metal gives it the strength and the security when it's shut, it's locked.
And it's not blowing open. Nothing's. It's not sagging.
I'm not having. Yeah, it's none of that happening. It's just solid. And so I always just get the kits. You know, I'll spend the extra $50 to $100 depending on what I'm doing for a gate, and just do it. And it works well, and it saves you money because you don't have to build it twice.
Now, one thing that I've noticed with gates and a fence, when I had a roommate who was putting up a fence. They put a gate, like a little door, just kind of back in the corner,
yeah,
almost hidden away.
Yeah.
I loved that idea. When they were building, I'm like, why? Like, but you never know if you need to get back there. Something gets lost. Something gets, you know, just easily accessible. I love, you know, plan out where you want your gates, but also think about where you might want one and think about it that way, right?
Well, so here's what I did on mine is I actually put, instead of putting the post in the ground, I put a couple metal brackets that I could bolt the post to.
Oh, okay.
So what I want is to be able on the side. So if I want to get an excavator back there, if I want to get my neighbor's dump trailer that I borrow back
open it up.
Yeah. I can open it up and have a 12-foot opening to get back in there. So I can actually take the gate off the hinges off the one side because that's posts in the ground. But there's a couple posts in there that I can unbolt from the ground. And so it's really cool the way I've got it. So I can unbolt it from the ground. I'm going to put some 4x4 so I don't crush the metal on it. And then I can pour a little dirt over the top of it in that area right there to bury it, to put a trailer over it. Then I can run a trailer over it all I want. And so when I want to bring in later on here, when I get the flower beds done and I want to bring in soil,
yeah,
I want to bring in bark before dust, I get yeah. all that deck back that done back there, before I put, it's probably going to be turf. I'm not going to probably do grass back there. I don't know if it's going to go or not. I'm either going to do a field turf or grass, but it's under a lot of cover. So that'll be an Eddie Ueda question as I'm going to shoot off to him with some pictures.
I was going
to
say, like, so when you're talking grass, are you talking about from seed or from sod?
Depending. There's a couple different ways. I'll probably go sod just because it's quick and easy. Yeah. There are some new, I might explore though. There's some other seed mat alternatives that work out there too that I'm looking at. So there's a couple different ways to go, but I also might just do, you know, sports field turf, the synthetic, and then I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
But the problem there is then I have to keep that clean and with pets. All the needles. The pets are okay. I mean, that's what they use in the, I have that in the side yard.
But it's just for example, when you let them out in the back, you were talking about that last hour, just, you know, letting them roam everything. Yep. Well, they're going to go to the bathroom while they're roaming.
They do, but it cleans up really well because it's synthetic, so there's nothing to soak into that. So it will clean back up. That's why you see it used for sports turfs and stuff too, is, you know, you can get the blood, sweat, and tears on it out there, and it's fine.
Rain doesn't matter,
you know. And there's ways to sanitize that too, but that's one of the things I haven't got that figured out. But now I've given myself access back there. I would have really messed up bad if I would have put this fence up and not have a nice wide access to get in there, because now you're tearing down fence and cutting off posts that you just put up, and that just ends up being dumb. And that's where it gets to be expensive, because now you're rebuilding fence
twice.
Nobody likes to do that. And so once I get this fence done and it's all dialed in and I've got all my pieces together, and of course my filming done on it as well, because we'll do a segment with that, I'm going to go through and stain it. And next segment I want to talk about that, because right now I've got some wood that's older, that's been dried out for a few months because it was from my side project, extra wood from that. But like the stuff that I had delivered last week, it was so wet that when I put a screw through that cedar, it was pushing the water out of it.
Ooh.
And it weighed so much. So I have to let that stuff dry out, because there's no way a finish is going to stick to that.
No.
It's just that dripping wet. So that's one of the things I want to talk about next segment, is of really going through, and I'm going to work with Miller on that one and come up with some good stain and get that dialed in, because I want to do kind of more of a charcoal gray stain to that, which is going to look really cool. It's going to be a lot different, you know, and not going to paint. I want to do a semi-transparent stain with it, and it's going to look really good that way, and it's going to fit with some of the stuff we're going to do in the house here as well. All right, when we come back, we'll be talking more fencing just as soon as Around the House returns.
Was my man, because he couldn't help me with
Welcome back to Around the House with Eric G. This is where we talk home improvement every weekend. Thanks for joining us. I'm Eric G.
I'm Dane Vodder.
Hey, make sure you hit us up on Facebook because we got a lot going on every week. You can check out on Around the House with Eric G. You can check out. I've been doing a lot of daily tips out there. Make sure. Are you doing the... We actually have our Alexa skill now.
Yeah.
So jump on to your Amazon account, enable the Around the House with Eric G skill, and you can get your weekly tip there. We put tips up in there so it shows up in your news feed, and that's a new way to get some tips from us, as well as just listen to the podcast out there. Make sure you like and subscribe and all that stuff. And if you've got a friend that you're watching struggle with home improvement projects, maybe you share this with them. We'd love to get a few more listeners on the Around. We're so close to getting over that 3,000 mark on there. So make sure you share our page to friends of yours that are doing. Maybe you got a neighbor that's struggling. Maybe we can help them out.
There are, odds are we may have touched on what they're struggling with as well.
And so we can give them a hand. So,
and they can give us a call.
Yeah, absolutely. That number, 971-233-8992. 971-233-8992. And you can hear the crows in the background
right
from our open-air studio
today. Loving this, though. This is going to probably be us for a few months as long as the weather
absolutely
cooperates.
Absolutely. So we're having a good time with this. It's just so much more fun doing it this way outside. And
next thing you know, we'll have a couple cocktails in our hands.
Yeah, maybe. Absolutely. There's no babies to that. We'll be doing that as well. And get a little warmer outside, we'll be doing that with you. So I want to talk before we run out of time here about decks, you know, and fence staining, because we talked about decks last weekend, and a lot of these same rules apply that when you build out something out of new wood, you need to let that dry out so you give some place for that to soak into. Because if you turn around and take, you know, like if you've got a brand new cedar deck that has got wet cedar that you've just put together and you go throw a stain on it, it's going to fall right off it. And there's no place for that to soak in. And so you want to let that dry out and give it some time to really dry out and get dry. So that way that will, you know, impregnate itself back into that wood so you get a good coverage with that. You know, and I'm going to be working with Miller Paint on mine. You know, there's a lot of good stains out there. New Zealand deck sealant's good. I'm just kidding. Look that up on YouTube. Please, you'll laugh.
It's been an inside joke of Around the House for probably about a couple of years now.
Probably three or four. Yeah. So anyway, good stuff out there. But there's a lot of good sealants. I'll be honest, though, with something you're walking on when it comes to finishes, I haven't had with heavy traffic. And I mean, probably the longest I've had a deck stain last is a couple years before it needs touching up. Fences are a different story. You know, there's a lot of good sealants out there and stains. You know, I'm going to do pretty dark on mine. I don't get a lot of direct sun. I'm in the shade here a lot, so it's not going to get too hot. It's not going to get burned off. If I was in the, you know, Eastern Washington, Eastern Oregon, it's going to get way hot and your deck's not going to last as long, or your stain's not going to last as long, but be careful with those colors. You can do something that's really trendy, but it also can get very hot if you've got full direct sun.
I was just going to ask a little bit about that. So something that's not trafficked as much, you'd say a darker stain, maybe go with that. But if something's going to be used and worn, it'd be easier to kind of patch that up if it's a lighter stain.
Yeah, it gives you a little more forgiveness, you know. Okay. It's one of those things that really kind of you fight. And I'll be honest, I wouldn't, with my experience, I wouldn't do a wood deck anymore as far as the decking. There's just too many composites out there that are really good. Unless I'm trying to do something that's a really nice, you know, exotic wood, I'd just go with the composites out there because there's just a ton of reasons why that's just going to last a lot longer. Fencing, you could also do vinyl fencing out there too. If you want a white fence, you can do vinyl out there. There's good ways to do that. I've seen, like, my parents did years ago, one of the early Trex fences. It didn't end well because the problem is in Eastern Washington, they had a lot of heat, and it started to sag, and it really started to get droopy because of the composite materials inside of it were getting so hot in the desert in the Tri-Cities. It didn't last long. It didn't do what you wanted it to do because it just got kind of droopy, like hot plastic. And that didn't work well. But so many other things out there. But just follow the directions of whatever the stain you're going to use. Get a good one. Get as good a one as you could afford. And you're going to be good to go. All right, everybody. That's the end of the show. And more importantly, listen to the podcast this week. We've got an exciting week ahead. I'm Eric G.
I'm Dane Vodder.
And you've been listening
to Around the House.
Around the House with Eric G. is produced by Designed by Eric G. in association with Salem Media and distributed nationally by the Sun Broadcast Group. All rights reserved. Copyright 2020 Designed by Eric G. We will be back next week. If you missed part of the show, check out the podcast of all of our shows at AroundTheHouseOnline.com. Remember, measure with a micrometer, mark with caulk, and cut with an axe. Thanks for listening to Around the House.
Thanks for listening to the Around the House with Eric G podcast. We really appreciate you listening. Now, one more thing to do. Subscribe to the podcast or just go in and leave a review so we can have some great comments to share with other people. And in the future, we're going to start putting these in the end of the show right here so you can catch them out as well. We really appreciate all of you listening to the show. Make sure you tune in all week long to AroundTheHouseOnline.com or just head us up on Facebook, Around the House with Eric G. Have a great rest of the week, everybody. See you on Wednesday when we do the midweek special. Hey, it's Eric G from Around the House. Are you planning a decking or siding project this year? If you are, you've got to check out my friends at Millboard. Millboard is a completely different kind of composite decking and cladding that enhances outdoor spaces with enduring distinction. Hand molded from the finest oak, it realistically mimics the natural grain and color of premium hardwood. If you're looking for something that doesn't look like plastic and instead real wood, check out Millboard.com. Make sure and check out that interview we did just a few weeks back. That's Millboard.com.